You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for April 14th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from, you know, the mother of all podcasts. It's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Yeah, it's in bad taste. Of course it's in bad taste.
Kaboom. Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah. It was that week.
And it is a beautiful Friday, a good Friday that we're recording in the afternoon. It's beautiful out. So, and just so you know, we are not in the professional studios like some podcasts. We are actually at home, as we always are. And we decided to leave one of the windows open so that youngest cat doesn't bother me during the podcast recording. And that means that we're going to have motorcycles and dogs barking and picnics and parades and whatever else is going on out there.
Spray shootings, you know, alien landings, those sorts of things. It's actually generally a pretty quiet street, but from time to time. Yeah, our recording
space. I've got a dog
space
barking outside, though, right now. Yeah. So.
Well, that's okay. That's a friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast, Hector. Right.
Hector the dog, friend of the podcast. Just putting in his 2 cents.
That's it.
And yeah, our recording space is what you might call rustic. I just to let you know, I'm sitting on a little plastic table, at a little plastic table that I use for work, which is probably 3x2. And for the occasion of the podcast, I move my little plastic table, which has business cards and pencils and way more stuff than it should, in front of my closet, and open the closet door so that the resonance for my voice doesn't echo back. It just is absorbed by my pants and shirts.
Pants and shirts.
That's my sound recording area. And then my beautiful wife is out, I don't know,
in
30
the living
feet away.
Room. Yeah. Yeah. In the living room.
Where it's a beautiful day.
And it is a beautiful day. And so we're grateful for beautiful days.
And we are grateful to our sponsors, which once again, this week we are being sponsored by, again, the most profitable business in Washington, D.C., where the good Lord split you, emergency farewell party planners, where the good Lord split you, because for the minions of Trump, any day might be the last day of your professional life. And we have a new presenting sponsor, which is a word I learned from the crooked media people who have actual sponsors. Our presenting sponsor this week is the Heritage Foundation Transmission Repair Shop. When you're because when your president reverses himself so many times in 1 week, you're going to burn out your populist clutch. So you need to go take your populist bullshit ideas back down to the Heritage Foundation Transmission Repair Shop for all of your Heritage Foundation transmission needs.
Wow.
Yeah. That's been the Professional Left Podcast. Let's sign off now. It's pretty much all spot because really – nothing happened this week.
Oh, my gosh.
Boring, boring, boring.
Oh, my gosh.
And Loretta Lynch was not in the news. Neither was Susan Rice. So
no,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, see? Because they dropped bombs instead. And
oops.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is true that they have flipped. Trump has flipped on what? NATO?
Everything.
China currency manipulation?
China itself.
He sat
NATO
down for 10 minutes and found out that Korea is as complicated as healthcare.
Very complicated. No one knew North Korea was so complicated. But it turns out it's very complicated. Very, very complicated. And apparently all it required was a Chinese dictator to spend 10 minutes eating chocolate cake with the man baby.
Yeah, and chocolate cake that is possibly tainted with food poisoning, given the very bad review of the Trump Mar-a-Lago restaurant. Was in violation of several health codes. They got it cleaned up right away. And that's, you know, it wasn't based on anyone getting sick, thank goodness. But
I so want 5 minutes into that conversation, Donald Trump's question to be, let me posit something. Let me ask something. North Korea, is there perchance a South Korea? Yes, Mr. President. Very smart. You get a gold sticker. Ivanka, come in here. I got a gold sticker from the Chinese gentleman.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how stupid President Stupid really is. But he reversed himself on that, on NATO. WikiLeaks is bad. Is back to being bad.
Bad again. Yep.
It's a horrible, horrible thing, and it's a Russian stooge, and it leaks and tries to.
He hasn't said that. His CIA director has said that after quoting WikiLeaks on Twitter last fall. So
the guy hired to run the CIA said WikiLeaks sucks. After Donald Trump spent pretty much the entire summit saying, we love WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks is great. Don't we love WikiLeaks? And all the pig people stood up on their little hind legs and went, ar. They didn't know. They couldn't spell WikiLeaks. They didn't know what it was. All they knew was it was Hillary and it was email and it made her look bad and made them feel like smart people. And anybody who makes the morons feel smart is good, because that's how smart, how stupid people think.
I want to say something about that, though, because to me, the mental gymnastics that a Trump supporter has had to do this week is some sort of brain power that Trump can never be wrong, although he has completely done a 180.
And on everything.
On lots and lots of things. Mm-hmm. And so this mother of all bombs that he dropped, when people on Twitter started bringing up that, you know, this one bomb could have paid for a whole lot of Meals on Wheels and a whole lot of X, Y, and Z.
Lots of stuff.
The response on Twitter from the Trump people was, well, Barack Obama bought this bomb.
And that's where I must disagree with you over the amount of mental effort required. Because there is no mental up, because it presupposes there is a linear form of thinking going on in the brains of these people. And there isn't. They're simply interchangeable bumper stickers.
Well, and this is where there's been some very specific polling on intervention in Syria.
Yes.
That shows that the needle for Democrats has moved hardly at all.
1%.
In terms of, right. And the needle for Republicans really moved. Like
60%.
Like on January 20th, boom, we're for whatever Donald Trump wants to do.
We're for, and more specifically, we are for things that we were adamantly against 2 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Because there's no longer a scary Negro in the White House. There's a big orange fascist who's a Democrat. There's a big orange fascist, and we love our big orange fascist. So whatever he says.
It's team sports, right?
And here's the thing. That one statistic, it was the statistic on Syria. This is a case where, you know, there's an evidence table at the front of the court, right?
Right, right.
And every couple of minutes, we bring up another exhibit about why you can't treat these people like grownups. Mm-hmm. Because they're morons. They're children. They are brainwashed fascist children. Because here's another example. Hey, remember WikiLeaks? Remember emails? And Donald Trump has made it enormously simpler, as has Sean Hannity, by recording for all posterity every vagrant thought he had on Twitter for the last 5 years. And now it's just a matter of, remember when he said this 2 years ago, and now he's saying the exact opposite. Remember this when he said this an hour ago, and he said the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The evidence table would, in a real courtroom, have collapsed by now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't affected them at all. And the reason is
I want to share with you, Driftglass, this one woman on Twitter who made the point that you will really like, which is that Donald Trump is a time traveler sent to warn us about him.
Yeah. I have had many ideas along those lines.
Yeah. But every tweet that you read from 2013 from Donald Trump is actually a warning about Donald Trump 2017.
It's from future Donald Trump warning you.
Yep.
It's from President Jared Kushner warning you in the past about. No, I would never expect the going back to the Bush administration, I would never expect facts to affect these people at all.
I have a question for you about that then. Because I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
No, I need to make two separate points and then you can attack me at your heart's content. Although she doesn't attack me. She smooches me because I'm the luckiest man in the world. I would never expect facts to affect the base of the party.
Okay.
The 30% that were with Nixon to the end, the 30% that were with Bush to the end, the 30% that, you know, put on powdered wigs 10 minutes after Bush was gone and swore they'd never heard of Bush. That clump of degraded, debased, dumbass humanity that's floundering at the shallow end of the human gene pool will never be affected by facts. They will never, their minds aren't wired to be affected by anything other than I'm right and you're bad. And that's it. That's just, you're dealing with someone who's operating at that mental level. However, the number of statistical proofs offered this week, especially on Syria, that both sides are not the same, should have killed both ciderism forever. Mm-hmm. If it were killable by ordinary means.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
week was the proof that it is a cult. It is a cult as rigid and as stupid and as mindless and as destructive as conservatism. Because you can look at the, well, here's the thing. Here's what Democrats believed 5 years ago. They believe exactly the same thing today. Here's what Republicans believed 5 years ago. They now believe the exact opposite today because their orange fascist is in office. These are obviously an asymmetric group of people. One side is relatively principled and stays with their principles and makes compromises based on political reality. One group is simply reprogrammable meatbags who will believe anything Sean Hannity says, no matter what. And the past simply doesn't exist for them. And the fact that both siderism is alive and well, that Matthew Dowd still has a job, Ron Fornia still has a job, they're all still out there, they're all still bullshitting, they're all still fully employed, tells me everything I have believed about the right has been true for 20 years, and everything I believe about the center has been true for 20 years. Now I will be very quiet, and you'll explain to me why I'm wrong.
No, I don't want to explain to you why we're wrong. I want to know about that third group of people in the conservative movement who consider themselves Bannonites. And maybe this is beyond the purview of our podcast because we primarily talk about media on this podcast. But and I don't want to spend a lot of time analyzing the motives of those who have frog icons as their Twitter handle, you know, a Twitter picture. That, you know, we've had quite a week with the Nazis this week. I'm very glad that Mel Brooks is still alive to see Sean Spicer talk about Hitler. You know, I mean, that was just amazing. And but there is a component to the conservative movement that does have a philosophical background and doesn't change with the wind. Mm-hmm. And Steve Bannon is a part of that philosophical groundwater.
White supremacist, fascist,
anti-government, pro-military, but anti-government, anti-Semitic.
Right.
And how does that, and first of all, is that group, and they've got a big media empire behind them now.
Sure do.
And they've got the Mercers behind them, apparently.
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm.
So what happens if it does turn out that Trump just jettisons Bannon?
That's a very interesting question. And I don't know. I do know that when I see a Nazi fighting with a Klansman, I say, let him fight.
Yeah, I know.
Let him fight. But here's the thing. It is a coalition at the base of very, very stupid, angry, ignorant, often hateful, often racist people. But
yeah,
they
when
do
I see
have...
the polls always constantly say 31%, 31%.
Right.
Very consistently, you'll see that.
Yes, they do.
30 to 31%. You
of
know you're
country.
Talking to Fox News viewers who are just dead-enders. Okay.
But here's the thing. Theocrats want to destroy the government because the government won't let them rule by divine edict. That's Jeff Sessions.
Right.
Jeff Sessions wants a nice, white, racist theocracy running the country. And he wants the government the hell out of his way to do that.
Which is also overlaps with white male supremacy.
Right.
And I mean, a lot of these groups are going to overlap. And in the polls, if you ask them a question that is broader, like, is Donald Trump essentially a great guy? You know, you're going to get the Nazis and the Klan and the Fox News viewer and overlap.
And the anti-tax nuts and the militia nuts and the plutocrats and all the anti-tax people. They all agree. But that's the thing. And this is why he won't let go of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and the last election.
Right.
This is the definition of a brain dead automatic opposition party.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Don't know how to govern because they don't believe in government. But the thing is, each subgroup of this large group of awful people hates the government for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They all made common cause because they all can agree on one thing. The scary Negro in the White House is our mortal enemy and is trying to
crooked
destroy
Hillary. Right.
Hillary Clinton is evil incarnate and must be stopped and destroyed at all costs. Even if we have to side with Russians, even if we have to throw in a lot with a Russian dictator, it's worth it because Hillary Clinton is evil incarnate. And liberals are personally responsible for every bad thing that's ever happened going back to the Battle of Thermopylae. They all agree on that. Put aside their petty differences. And Klansmen could link arm with skinheads, could link arm with Nazis.
Well, and this is why when I saw people getting upset that, oh, my God, Donald Trump is still tweeting about crooked Hillary.
Sure.
And I thought, that's the thing that unites his base behind him. When times are tough, the first thing he's going to say is Crooked Hillary or the liberals or, you know, I'm going to blackmail Democrats into going my way. Of course, he's going to do that. Those are things that unite everybody behind him.
And the thing is, there is no reasoning with these people at all, but their illogic, their irrationality, their pathologies are slightly different. So it's a locked ward full of crazy people, and they're all crazy in their own unique way. But they all agree that liberals and Democrats and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are the epitome of all evil on earth and need to be opposed at all costs. And everything they've ever touched, everything they ever brushed up against needs to be burned down, fumigated and rolled back.
Yes. And like we said last week, there are triggers that they use. Consciously or unconsciously, I'm not sure with Donald Trump sometimes what's conscious and what's unconscious. But, you know, you bring up the name of any African-American Democratic woman, Susan Rice, and that, boom, triggers a visceral reaction on the part of these folks that, oh, 2 minutes hate. Let's have 2 minutes hate on Susan Rice. Yeah. They know someone is doing that. And whether it's Bannon, who was sort of knowing which buttons to push, or whether Jared Kushner also knows which buttons to push, although he's got to be careful which button he pushes, because if it starts to be a meme that Jared Kushner is the first Jewish president, there's a big part of Donald Trump's base that is going to have a real hard time with that. It's very anti-Semitic.
Let me just say that you've pointed this out to me in, I believe, certain phone commercials before. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going way, way out in the woods, but I'm coming right back.
Okay.
And they're also in something called neuro-linguistic programming, which is something I went to one seminar and thought, oh, this is just silly. The person who was teaching was actually silly. But the concept of mirroring, of when you want to con someone or persuade someone or unconsciously move them onto your side, you start mimicking their gestures.
Mm-hmm.
You start mimicking their speech patterns. You literally get into their head by becoming like them, by imitating their cadence and their language. That Donald Trump has a 100-word vocabulary.
Yeah, yeah.
He is really good at conning stupid people into giving him things and then getting a bunch of lawyers to drop houses on them when the stupid people wake him and go, holy fuck, you screwed me out of everything. Well, I've got 100 lawyers here and I'll bury you in court. So he knows how to cheat the system really well.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very effective con man as long as the people he's conning are really stupid. And the Republican Party did him an enormous favor by gathering the stupidest people in America into one place and conditioning them to believe anything that came out of someone's mouth who was rich, who was racist, and who was willing to call Barack Obama a birther or not in this country, who's willing to say and do all the horrible, nasty, filthy, demagogic, misogynist, racist things that Donald Trump just wallows in. And he walked up to the microphone and basically said, you know, I have arrived. You know, he leapt right out of their id onto the stage. He has money. He has a wife he bought who stands right next to him. And he's everything they want to be. So they don't care that his policies don't make any sense, that they're a mishmash, that he reverses himself. And I really don't think they reason much beyond, ook, ook, my team, ook, ook.
Yeah.
And when he screws up, when he takes their health care away, they do what crazy Uncle Liberty, in my experience, has always done. They make excuses. Mm-hmm. They lie about the past.
Mm-hmm.
They lie.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, all politicians do this sort of thing and change the subject to Barack Obama.
Right.
They will not take any ownership of the fact that they are horrible people who make really shitty decisions and put a monster in the White House.
As Donald Trump will not take any responsibility.
Right.
I mean,
so what they will do is, well, as long as he brings the jobs back, you know,
I don't
care about all this other stuff. As long as he brings the job, you know, he's taking away your health care. I mean, that skit from Saturday Night Live last week.
Which Mika and Joe thought was just terrible.
Oh, yeah. You're mocking the hillbillies. No, you're accurately representing Trump voters who are discovering that they are cutting their own economic throat and say, but you're still the president. Yay.
Really
and
he's just wrong.
He's delighted because it's wait a minute. I have scammed you people repeatedly. And your response is to dig deeper and throw more money at me.
Mm-hmm.
You're the perfect chump. So you know, the Republican Party has bred the perfect chump. And the thing about chumps is the one thing they're never going to admit is that they're chumps. Because once they do that, their entire identity collapses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they are completely okay with whatever the fuck Donald Trump wants to do. He can bomb a bunch of countries and they're going to be for it. They might jump off the reservation, as it were, for one thing or two, but get right back on it. And whatever he does, they'll find an excuse why it wasn't his fault, why it was necessary, mm-hmm. why Barack Obama was worse, why the past doesn't matter. But they are pathological liars. They lie to themselves all the time, yep. which is the only way you can watch Fox News, either yep. ironically or if you're nuts.
Yeah.
And so I
want to say, I had someone on Twitter respond to my call for Donald Trump's taxes by claiming that he is too busy to release them. I mean, really, that's their argument. Mm-hmm. He's busy right now. Well, Dick Cheney wasn't too busy. Ronald Reagan was never too busy. And I just started listing Republicans who, and then no response. It's just there. I can't get over how many excuses come that way. Well, yep.
And the excuse doesn't, and they're usually, they come in clusters. They come in groups. But behind all the excuses, and this has been my experience with conservatives I know for years, which mm-hmm. is the excuse has nothing to do with explaining away the behavior. Mm-hmm. The excuse is, please stop talking about this. You're making me very uncomfortable because you're exposing the fact that I'm a fucking racist nitwit. Mm-hmm. And I don't mm-hmm. like it. So let's look over at the shiny object over there, which is shaped like Barack Obama. And
the yeah,
Hillary
but
Clinton.
Yeah, that what about.
And since I'm a liberal,
yeah.
I don't do that. I go, no, let's keep talking about the fact that let's. And then it's, well, you know, have you noticed how the sports teams are doing? Mm-hmm. Have you seen the weather today? A lot of weather we're having today. But it's never, ever, ever taking ownership of the fact that they make wretchedly bad, destructive decisions based on their fear and their racism and their inherent fascism. These are authoritarian types. They
and
like.
And as you say, they have a lot of help from mainstreamers. Yeah.
It's very profitable. It's enormous profits to be made in telling stupid people, stupid racist Republicans, what they want to hear. That, what was it? It's almost a direct quote. I'll come to it in a little bit, but that is almost a direct quote. I think it's from Lawrence O'Donnell. Mm. Yeah, it was talking about Fox News. I think we touched on this last week. Mm-hmm. It was him being interviewed by Joy Reid.
Oh, that's right. When he was on Sunday, Sunday, right, on the Joy Reid show, talking about Bill O'Reilly. And he has a friend at Fox News.
He does.
Which, whatever that means, he has a friend at Fox within the Fox
organization.
We hope that person is working on, The Simpsons or whatever. Yeah. But
not. But
he said that if Bill O'Reilly's ratings continue to be high, the problem is that those ratings are the reason that they're willing to excuse ratings at Fox News is that ratings bring in advertising dollars.
Right.
And so what has happened in particular with women's organizations going after advertisers and liberal organizations going after advertisers and then employees of those organizations going to the advertisers and saying, please don't, high up employees, if a high up employee of X company, mm-hmm. executive vice president, who is a woman, goes to the board meeting and says, look, I don't think we should be advertising on O'Reilly because he's an embarrassment to women and
to
he's offensive to women. Yeah. And that hurts us if we're advertising on that show. That is a valid argument that will be listened to within that company.
Yes,
and
it
will. So Bill O'Reilly has lost, 41 advertisers now? 50 advertisers?
Like now he's on vacation.
Now he's on vacation. And chances are he may or may not. The likelihood is he won't be back because the Rupert Murdoch sons who have taken over Fox News mm-hmm. don't want him there. Now, you and I talked last night about how many people we know who have been fired, either we know them personally or we know them just from reading about them, uh-huh. have been fired on day one for the hint that they might embarrass the company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no,
it's employment at will. You're out of here. Box for your stuff.
Why do you think I went anonymous?
Yeah, right.
Not that I'm ashamed of anything I believe, but no, the world is rife with people who've been sacked because they posted the wrong picture on Facebook.
Right.
And the HR department was combing through all the employee pictures and saw so-and-so getting drunk and saying or doing something inappropriate. And boom, you're gone.
Right, right. And we've talked about Shirley Sherrod, who was fired by the Obama administration because some liar, mm-hmm. Andrew Breitbart, edited a video of her.
James O'Keefe.
And James mm-hmm. O'Keefe edited a video of her mm-hmm. saying making it look like she said the opposite of what she was saying.
Yeah, and they panicked and they fired her.
And they panicked and they fired her that day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it's done, but
almost,
not at Fox News.
Almost. Well, and I'll go a little bit further. It's not done that way at Fox News or at CNN or at MSNBC or any cable news outlet. And this is the part where
What do you mean by that? Because no one at MSNBC has been found to be sexually harassing someone.
No. What I'm saying is embarrassing the company, embarrassing the brand is grounds for termination.
Mm-hmm. You're saying is the Gingrich rules. That's what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
There, the cable, and it operates on the ratings game. Mm-hmm. It just applies much more broadly than I had ever suspected. O'Reilly, as Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out, O'Reilly will be back if his ratings stay constant. If his ratings go down, he's gone.
Except now we know that may not be the case because the advertisers have fled.
Right.
As I was saying, the ratings are only a good marker if they bring in the advertising dollars.
Right.
So
you
can't stop people from watching Bill O'Reilly. But you can stop advertisers from wanting to be associated with that brand if it gets bad enough.
Your point is absolutely correct. The broader picture, however, and I'm not diminishing that because you're quite right, but a broader picture, Lawrence O'Donnell pointed out, was a Megyn Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Megyn Kelly's gone. Tucker Carlson takes over for her. And what happens? Nothing.
Nothing. Right.
They didn't stay the same. Actually, they go up a little bit. So.
Well, and Tucker Carlson is actually the ideal replacement for Bill O'Reilly because and this was the point that Lawrence O'Donnell made that you and I went, oh, we want to hear more about that, which is people don't tune in to Fox News to see Bill O'Reilly. They tune in because Bill O'Reilly says what they want to hear.
Tells them what they want. They don't tune in to Fox to see Megyn Kelly. They tune in to Fox to see Fox.
Right.
They
and
tune
Fox
in to...
is a cult
yes.
that gives them smug white privilege and permission. And I didn't get a chance to say this last week, but it came to me very clearly being forced by work to watch some Stuart Varney on Fox Business, which is nonstop. This guy has a $10 million contract, nonstop. Look at what the welfare recipients are getting. And I looked at that last week and it really hit me how much of a breaking of the commandment against coveting.
Uh-huh.
They are being trained to sin in that specific way
mm-hmm.
of thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's whatever.
Ass.
You know, ass, wife, whatever the commandment says. And it is a constant stream of someone else is gonna get your stuff. This actually all belongs to you. Someone who is not worthy is getting something for free that you, Fox News viewer, have to work hard all your life to get.
Right. They're taking
Isn't
your money.
That terrible? Right.
They're taking your hard-earned money and giving it to those people.
Those undeserving people.
It's the oldest argument in the world.
It is coveting. You are taught to covet what other people have. Poor people have microwaves and refrigerators and microwave ovens and
Obama phones. They have Obama phones,
yeah,
for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah. And free healthcare now. Free healthcare.
Oh,
and the coveting that they're being trained to be resentful, and this is what the Trump vote was about, uh-huh. was resentment over what other people have and taking it away from them, those illegals, those brown people, those welfare recipients, and grievance against what other people have is what they're taught to do.
Right. And that is, they have an immersive media environment where they can bathe in that all day long, mm-hmm. all night long. That's why Megyn Kelly out and Tucker Carlson, and it doesn't matter.
Right. And who is as good mm-hmm. at smug moralizing against those people, as good as Bill O'Reilly, is Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson.
You know, he can just, he can do that.
Heir to the what? The frozen dinner fortune, and you know, private schools up and down, and what is he doing? He's chumming it up with the working class and mocking people who went to Harvard.
But that's
the point. The point is, it doesn't matter to the people who run Fox or the people who run CNN or the people mm-hmm. who run MSNBC how depraved their employees are.
Yeah. Yeah,
they cast their shows, as Jeff Zucker said in the New York Times. In a long interview, he thinks of it as a drama.
Mm-hmm.
A cast of characters in a dramatic presentation. And Jeffrey Lord is one of the members of the cast.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows who he is. And it's a familiar thing. And he thinks of it as a sporting event mm-hmm. that you stage for an audience, which is what we've been saying since before we did this podcast. It's a puppet mm-hmm. show.
Yeah.
And the people who run the networks, the people who make management decisions, are truly the most depraved ones of the lot. Because
but aren't we being manipulated then in exactly the same way, or at least Jeff Zucker thinks right. we are, which is Fox and Friends, the show that we love to hate, the crotch couch, whatever. Right. I have a million names for them.
Uh-huh.
And spending my emotional energy hating Steve Doocy, actually, Fox News as a brand doesn't care whether I hate or love Jeffrey Lord, you know, or hate right. or love Megyn Kelly or Steve Doocy or whoever else it is.
Well,
all attention is good attention.
Let's be clear. You and I don't watch Fox at all.
No, I don't.
You watch
unless
it.
I have to for work. Yeah.
There's the thing. There is a difference between reading and enjoying Pravda and wallowing in Pravda and thinking yeah. everything in Pravda is true and everything is correct and all is the outside world is a dark and terrifying place and only we here in the bubble know what we're talking about. There's a difference between that and being an intelligence officer mm-hmm. of the media whose job it is to figure out what these fuckers are doing and why they're doing it and how they are screwing our country up and telling people about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Lord gets to go on CNN and call Donald Trump the Martin Luther King
of healthcare.
Yes. And gets to keep his job, not because what he said is not ridiculous and odious and awful, but because he and Van Jones and the rest of them are employees in a show.
Yeah.
In a drama.
And I laugh about that because it's so blatantly lined up to really drive outrage. His job is to make us mad.
Right.
But I also understand how deeply hurtful it is to someone who isn't represented in the media.
Yes.
To hear that, to hear him say what he says about.
And that's why
I feel that way as a liberal. I mean, he lies about Democrats every single day. We are the party. We're not the party of Lincoln. We're the party of slave owners, you know, and Jeffrey Lord says that every opportunity he gets.
And never loses
and never pays
his
a price.
Job.
Never pays for it.
Because and not because he's, you know, but because Jeff Zucker has decided that that's what news is at CNN.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at MSNBC, I'm cruising past there today. Who do I see? I see Hugh Hewitt mm-hmm. explaining to me that finally, and he was giddy about this, finally, Donald Trump is emphatically putting an end to the passivity that the Obama administration had towards fighting ISIS by dropping a big bomb. Now, Hugh Hewitt is a liar and a fraud and a jerk and a weasel, but he has a job at MSNBC. Who was on earlier at MSNBC as a foreign policy and political expert? Bill Kristol.
Yep.
So what we have been saying is the media environment is thoroughly corrupt. But it's corrupt on purpose.
Yeah.
It's there for a reason. The people at CNN who are, you know, ants in a jar are there because that's what Jeff Zucker wants them to be.
I want to say something nice about Bill Kristol. I can't believe I'm going to do this, but Bill Kristol this week, to his credit, has been using his Twitter stream to remind people that he was told to vote for Donald Trump because Hillary Clinton was a warmonger.
Sure.
And that if we vote for Hillary Clinton, we're going to be involved in a war with Syria, and we don't want that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good on you. You know, broken clock right twice a day, Bill Kristol.
I look at it the other way. Donald Trump exists to normalize Bill Kristol.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Donald Trump. Donald Trump's presence has made it possible for the worst right-wing scumbags of the Bush administration
mm-hmm.
to be sold as credible, edgy analysts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
During the Trump administration. And literally all they're doing, Bill Kristol, Rick Wilson, who created the Max Cleland slander ad and a bunch of other Republican attack ads, who was just an absolute scumbag during the Bush administration and during the Obama administration. Charlie Sykes, who was Wisconsin's own Rush Limbaugh for decades. All these people who profited from building this audience of monsters and demagogues and racists and scumbags are now bathed in the blood of Christ. Mm-hmm. They're all forgiven. And no one talks about their past. No one mentions it because Donald Trump exists to make these people look reasonable. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. Their entire critique of Donald Trump is simply ripping off what liberals have been saying for 20 years. That's all it is. There's not a shred of original thought in it. There's not a shred of original self-reflection in it. These people are simply money-driven sock puppets, wind socks, rather, who will blow in whatever direction the strongest breeze is coming from. Right now, it's profitable for them to hate Donald Trump. Maybe they do on some level, but since they're unprincipled from the beginning, it's hard to know what they really think. But there's a place for them at the table because they are expatriates. They're cast – they're exiles from the conservative community. But their entire shtick is basically reading old liberal blog posts from 2004, 2005 – and applying them to Donald Trump. And my point being, if you want to do that at half the cost, hire fucking liberals. Bring liberals on. We'll be happy to tell you not just why Donald Trump is awful, but why Donald Trump is the end point of a 30-year-long process, which has included...
Of which you were a part.
Which were an eager part. You made your fucking fortune. You bought your house with money you raised calling people like me a traitor. And now you're on my liberal TV wringing your hands and going, oh my God, this is so unreal. How are all these people so awful? Why are they so stupid? How come Trump voters are morons? Well, because you trained them to be morons. Mm-hmm. But again, that is happening not because they wandered onto the studio and somebody thought Rick Wilson would look good on camera. He doesn't. He looks like yellow bastard from Sin City at point of fact. They put a mic on him because A, he's quotable, and B, because Phil Griffin wants it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a quota system on cable news. I swear if you did the math, you'd find the exact numbers. You have to have 42% of your guests have to be conservative in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And the psycho ones like Joe Walsh count for twice because it's just fucking nuts. So you can't have on your good liberal guests. You can't have on the reasonable ones. You can't have on Malcolm Nance, who's a Colin Powell conservative. You can't have on Rick Perlstein. Until you fill up the jelly jar with enough conservative bad boy points. And so you have to put on, I swear to God, this is exactly, there's no other way it could work. You're required to pay your dues and amuse the audience members. And that's, getting back to Lawrence O'Donnell, that's why he said, Bill O'Reilly was a popular guest on all these talk shows, even though he's a horrible, sexual
human
partner.
Being. Yep,
because he brings with him 50,000 people will watch him if he shows up on the Letterman show.
Right.
Or shows up on a late night talk show. And that's all they care about. Literally, that is all they care about. All they care about is the size of the audience they have and how many people they can sell that audience to at a profit.
Right. Because he sells books.
Right.
He sells TV shows and he sells advertising. And so the question is it going to be to the point now where if Bill O'Reilly shows up on Late Night with Colbert, for instance, that advertisers say no. I'm not advertising on your show that night because you're having Bill O'Reilly on. That's what has to happen because the eyeballs, like you said, are programmed to go where O'Reilly goes and be loyal to him.
And we're
not going to get away with those. But if the advertisers say, no, if you're going to have Milo on, if you're going to have a Klansman on, if you're going to have some, I don't want to be on right after you have Hitler on the TV, right? I don't want to do that. But I still make money if I'm on your show, and stay there. If the advertisers say, no, I bought a package and so I'll have a Cialis on ad on every single night while Stephen Colbert's on, no matter who his guests are.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think they pay for that. I think the advertisers say, yeah, you've got to have 42% of this voice.
Right.
That's going to get me my corporate tax cuts. You have to have that percentage on for advertisers to be happy.
Right. And you and I actually...
And that's audience, and that's advertising, and that's money, and that's... It goes on. It's all one big package,
and
but...
And we don't care about the morality of anyone you put on the air.
No, we're... Because we will have a job for life in the advertising department unless we do a Pepsi ad like we did.
Right. And you and I actually got a little tiny taste of this several years ago when we did a college radio show.
Yes, we did.
And,
oh, my gosh.
And we violated the format.
We did. We told them off.
We
told them off. They had a call in.
Yeah.
Who's a regular guy. One of their regular caller. Regular. Every time. He calls in all the time.
Hey, it's crazy Uncle Liberty calling to talk about abortion.
Right. And or whatever. He was talking about a lot of things. And then I said, well, what are you going to do about? And it was a specific issue. It was taxes, I think. Or what are you going to do about? I think it was about Wall Street taxes. And
whatever
it was Mitt Romney and Wall Street taxes and so forth. And he said to me, I don't care about that issue.
Right.
And at that point, there was no point in talking to him.
No.
Because he wasn't interested in having a discussion about issues. He was interested in throwing bombs.
Right. And that's
coming on the air and throwing bombs and getting attention. And then you and I stopped the show. We stopped the interview.
And turned on the host.
And they hung up on him.
And asked the host.
And we asked the host, why do you do this?
Why do you put awful people like this on the air? That was a
horrible. Why do you take his call? Yeah.
Why'd you take this call? This is a terrible person, and he's the example of the kind of people we are trying to oppose. Why are you putting him on the air for free over and over again? Well, it just seems like good radio. You know, we like to hear you mix it up. Like, oh, you're the problem. You are the fucking problem.
Yeah.
Because you all.
And we shamed him.
Yeah, we did.
Really badly.
And we never ever got invited back.
No, we didn't.
But you know, screw you. I've already been on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Driftglass. Peggy Noonan won a Pulitzer this week.
Yeah. That's deep in our notes, but it's really important that we get to that because, if she, first of all, she drank her way to a Pulitzer, which I would not resent if she were Tom Waits and wrote, whiskey voiced elegies about loss and regret. That'd be fine. But she's just a sad old drunk who pines for the good old days of Reagan and meanders all over, God's half acre in search of a fence to straddle. And she is the wholly owned property of 10 grain over at Mock Paper Scissors.
10 grain over at Mock Paper Scissors.
If she gets a Pulitzer, he gets half. That's all I can say.
So true.
She is to 10 grain what David Brooks has been to me.
Right.
I don't hate David Brooks. I hate everything he stands for. And 10 grain has been merceless over the years, documenting
and writing wonderful parodies of her columns. Yeah.
She is but she is, everybody's batty aunt, and which is fine, but everybody's batty aunt who writes speeches for George H.W. Bush and gets a permanent.
She's part of that network of people and really, lost it for me forever. When she said, well, we don't need to talk about torture. That's unpleasant. So
a great nation sometimes just walks.
When the Abu Ghraib torture pictures came out, I don't think we need to talk about that.
No. I'm sure that'll be taken care of. But she said that, I'm sure a great nation, sometimes you just have to walk on by. I think that was her exact quote. But it was.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about the terrible thing that my government did in my name, especially since I really supported the shit out of that government and mocked the shit out of anybody who said that they were the sort of people who would torture people.
Yep.
And again, that was 15 years ago.
And we need to talk also, I'm looking at our list, about Donald Trump really giving the game away on what, hold on a minute, here goes this motorcycle by, hold on a minute. We need to talk this week about Donald Trump really giving the game away on the healthcare repeal.
Yeah.
His interview with Maria Bartiromo of Fox Business, in which she is, just as an aside, the perfect Wall Street interviewer, in that she will ask a question and you answer it. And then she said, but how does that affect corporate tax cuts?
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't matter what you're talking about or how much you're lying. She is an advocate for corporations getting tax cuts. And she's going to spin it around to that. And regardless of what you've said and how ridiculous what you said is, she's going to make it about corporate tax cuts. She did this with Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary from Goldman Sachs, who was spinning stuff about 4% growth. And I mean, he was getting high off the fumes of Reaganomics.
Yep.
On the air, we're going to have 4% growth is going to be easy, and we're going to get taxes down, to, you know, 25%, or we're going to get them down as far as we can because we know those just pay for themselves and it's going to be revenue neutral because we're going to use that. And he didn't say crazy math. He didn't say voodoo economics, but that's what he was saying. He was quoting and saying, we're going to use exactly the same techniques to create imaginary numbers that look like we are generating revenue when we're not.
So you're saying he was the leader of the drunken Milton Friedman bobsled team.
And Maria,
going around
Maria
the laughter
Bartiromo
curve.
Going around right the laughter curve. And said,
I'm sorry.
Well, but does that mean we get tax cuts? What about the tax cuts? And right on by, you know, she filled her 4-minute interview getting the tax cut promise made. Then Donald Trump this week, why are you continuing to push for health care reform, quote unquote?
Yeah.
You know, I put that in quotes, but why aren't you going straight for the tax reform? Why are you now just wasting more time with health care? Isn't that, we thought that was over. You walked away from that. You weren't going to do it. And now you're back to it. And now you're thinking you're going to negotiate with Democrats. Why aren't you working on the tax cuts for the corporations? And why aren't you working on tax reform? And his answer was, we need to get the health care reform done first because there's $900 million sitting there that we can take for tax reform.
No, there's $900
billion. Billion. There's $900 billion, excuse me. It's with a B.
Yeah.
$900 billion sitting there that we can then take and add to the tax reform package.
Yeah. We need to loot healthcare
to
give the money to my friends.
And take away healthcare from the 24 million people that have it because we know that that will get us more tax cuts for billionaires.
Right.
So don't think for an instant that this is about repeal and replace. Ever. It never was about that.
And
it is about two things. Mm-hmm. It's about tax cuts for billionaires, first and foremost. And it's about shrinking government in some sort of esoteric way for Paul Ryan to be happy.
And let's go back to our six basic stories that we remind people. Story number one, even though Donald Trump totally screwed the healthcare pooch, it doesn't matter because they're going to continue to try like hell to find some way to loot the healthcare system of hundreds of billions of dollars for tax cuts for their rich friends and corporations that own them.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Vladimir Putin massively interfered with the American presidential election on behalf of Donald Trump and his friends.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Donald Trump and his friends are wholly owned stooges of Vladimir Putin. Number four.
And we would know that if he released his tax returns, which is why he doesn't.
Which we'll be marching tomorrow for that.
Yeah.
We'll be at the march tomorrow.
We might have to be a virtual march because I don't know if there is one in Springfield. They are doing a march for science on April 22nd on Earth Day.
Yes.
And we will be at that march.
Yes.
I have not been able to find, I've been searching Facebook. I have not been able to find a tax march in Springfield.
We'll find one. We'll make one. By God,
there is a virtual one. There is a virtual one. You can hold up a sign that says, Mr. President, show me the money,
mm-hmm.
and put it on Twitter. And I think that's the march that Donald Trump's going to see.
Yes, the Twitter march.
So the Twitter march. Yeah.
Number four, Donald Trump and his friends cannot stop lying all the time about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, the party of Trump is so desperate to win at anything, they're willing to look the other way mm-hmm. as Vladimir Putin plays his stooges in the White House to wreck the government and lie incessantly about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, this is the part where we blame the voter, because we're that rare podcast, even on the liberal side, that actually says, no, the voters who voted for this shit are the people who should pay for it and who are blamed for it. The base of the party of Trump is either too fucked in the head stupid or too in love with the idea of being a foot soldier in the American Fascist Party to care about the first five stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been mm-hmm. true. That has been absolutely consistent since day one.
Yep.
Now, this is what gives me hope. A loss. When is a loss not a loss?
Oh, when it's Kansas 04?
When it's Kansas 04, baby. When the reddest district in the Koch brothers' backyard in Kansas damn near goes to a Democrat. A Bernie Democrat.
A Bernie Democrat.
A pro-choice, pro-LGBT, loud and proud about those things, Democrat. That's when you know something is afoot. Something is going on in the land. And I would pair that with what's happening in Illinois over the last week.
Yeah, there's an article about how many Democrats won in Illinois last Tuesday.
All over the place. All over the place. And there's a Cheryl Bustos, a congresswoman from Illinois, has a program, a Fill the Bench program, I believe, or Build the Bench program, where she is doing workshops. She's done a couple of them here in Illinois on how to run for office. And these are the kind of offices that we always mention and that you're always told, for God's sakes, run for something. Mm-hmm. These are aldermanic offices. These are mayoral offices. These are local offices, but Democrats are winning, sweeping them in Illinois. I'm not saying there's hundreds of them, but there's enough to notice, enough to make it a national story. And John Ossoff, I believe John is his first name, Ossoff.
Yep.
It looks like he might, I'm not saying he will, but he might actually win Newt Gingrich's old congressional district going away. I won't have to go to a runoff, which is that, I mean, you know, I'm not in the prediction business anymore myself. But boy, if you're looking for some reason for hope, the fact that these people are pulling huge numbers in districts where they have traditionally no business even being within 30 points is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. That's why we need to be on this all the time.
And let's dive into that DCCC versus the base of the Democratic Party argument, which is, as we said on several podcasts ago, about not caring who the chairman of the Democratic Party is.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about what the Democratic Party in Washington, D.C. is doing, because they have resources that they can share or not. They have people that they can share or not. But in the end, the energy of the progressive movement, the energy of the anti-Trump movement is never going to be at that on that stage.
No.
This is the resistance, the pussy hats, the LGBT groups that are resisting, the scientists who are resisting. All of that is coming from a place that is not about an administrative office in the Democratic Party. And being angry with that office for anything is a waste of time. They're corporatists. I'm not putting them down, because at times they do the right thing, and when they do the right thing, they should be applauded.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are not focused on winning,
right?
And Sam Brownback came out and tweeted, "It's a great day to be a Republican." When they won, you know, what I have heard is that if the swing that happened between Kansas voting, that district voting last November, and that district voting last week, if that swing happens in every district, the Democrats will gain 122 seats in the House.
Good God.
If that happens nationwide.
Yeah.
And that was at 538. They tweeted that. And I said, what if we won half of those?
Yeah.
What if we want? What if the swing isn't quite that big and we only win 60 seats?
60 or 70 seats. Yeah.
What if that's how 2018 goes?
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
You know, you put Maxine Waters as the representative on the ethics committee.
Yeah.
Who is in charge of calling witnesses?
Yep. Yep.
You put that party, the Maxine Waters contingent of the party, in charge of deciding what's going to happen to investigations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with that.
Hey, it's we're inside the White House now in 2018. Join me now in the inside of the White House in 2018. This is like a novelty record from the 70s. You know, one of those talk and music.
Yeah.
Hey, Reince, it's Adam Schiff on the phone again. He says he has even more subpoenas. And just hear, you know,
Donald Trump, we don't want your tax returns. We called the IRS for those. Yeah. They're bringing them over. And yeah, we're getting Schedule C and D
all of it.
And E.
All of it,
and
every update, every transfer, every corporation you own or have had your fingers on, we're getting it all. You know how they brought down Al Capone there, Don? Yeah. Yeah, they didn't wait for his criminal empire to turn on him.
Yeah, right.
Because that was never going
to
happen.
That's the point. Exactly. They didn't wait for people to not want to drink anymore, right? They didn't decide that they were going to make it about his activities. They made it about taxes.
Well, and can I point out a little something on the how to win side?
Yeah.
This is a post I did today. on the subject of even the lowliest douchebag has something to teach us.
Which I'm going to cross-post at Crooks and Lawyers tomorrow, by the way.
And I would not inflict this on anyone here. There will be no audio from this because it's Ann Coulter talking to Tucker Carlson. Believe me, I didn't.
And we don't want to, we don't even really want to talk about that.
We don't.
Except for the conclusion, the question they asked and the conclusion they came to.
The question Tucker Carlson asked was, what should people who support the president in the beginning think of what's happening in the last week? Fine.
Yep. But with all the flip-flops. I mean, he was really apparently trying to address the issue, right? And I think he was trying to inoculate Fox News.
It was about Syria.
And it was also about China. It was also about currency manipulation all of a sudden not being a thing.
Yeah,
right?
The chyron under it was missiles hit Syrian targets.
Right.
So, I mean, that's really specifically what but the broader thing was, what do we do about all these changes? But specifically, it was about this. And it took them less than 2 minutes to pivot to the real topic, which was bashing liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann Coulter opens her pie hole to say that liberals and the media, who are the same thing, want to dump the entire third world on our country. That's a direct quote, as part of our master plan to, and another direct quote, destroy America.
Destroy America. She said destroy America.
Now,
the two words, destroy America.
Liberals and the media want to destroy America. Now, that by itself means nothing, right? That's just another wingnut yapping at Fox and who listens to them, but a bunch of other people who are already too far gone for us to care about. However, the point being, for the last 30 years, give or take, that's a long ass time. That's longer than a quarter century.
Mm-hmm.
Virtually every conservative spokesman, every conservative elected official has never missed an opportunity to proceed or follow their comments with, and liberals are monsters, and liberals are traitors, and liberals are liars. They repeat it because they've been taught to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we need to start doing for ourselves.
Yep.
Because while fatuous liberal and centrist pundit has been wringing their hands, talking about how Democrats shouldn't offend America's inbred nitwits or bigots or Fox News rageaholics by actually blaming them for Donald Trump, conservatives have reaped success by spending the last 30 years of never missing a chance to blame the left for every fucking thing and lying constantly. And I was looking around for the proper graphic to lead in. And you know what? At the end of 30 years, they now have the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, 32 state legislatures, 33 governorships, reserve seating at every news program, and rollbacks of everything you and I care about. It worked. And so we need to stop listening to people who keep telling us, just bend over further, compromise a little bit more, dig deeper, be empathic, try to extend another olive branch, even though every time you extend one, you pull back a burnt stump. The only way to beat the right is to run at them with a sword in each hand. One for the right and one for the fucking pundits who tell you to put the swords down because they're both on the same goddamn team. And here's the graphic I found. The graphic was from the New York Times, September 20th, 1990, on the politics of slash and burn. And they were talking about this new thing, this group called GOPAC, a new kicker, this GOPAC group. And they were talking about all these words that they were starting to creep into the Republican vocabulary on purpose because Newt Gingrich was teaching them. And they were sick, traitors, bizarre, self-serving, shallow, corrupt, pathetic, and shame.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of the article is the saddest thing of all. Again, this is 1990. The nakedness of the GOPAC offering also makes it useful. There must be limits to the negative politics that voters will bear. The bald appeal to invective will certainly probe those limits. And the idea was, you know, that we're violating all these standards of decency. And they'll work over the short term, maybe. But negative discourse serves democracy poorly. The temptation to avoid serious debate is already great. It increases as the stakes soar. And slander becomes a rewarding, easy option. That was in 1990, which is starting to be a really long time ago. And the Republican Party has been running this one fucking play every day for the last 30 years. And it's high time we started beginning and ending our sentences when we talk about Republicans as the stupid Republicans, the racist Republicans, the traitorous Republicans, the self-serving Republicans, the corrupt Republicans, the shame of the nation. the lying Christian Republicans, the fake Christian Republicans, the people who betrayed the party of Lincoln, who assassinated Lincoln a second time and turned that party into the party of Jefferson Davis. When you start hearing liberal pundits on television shows saying that as part of their vocabulary as easily as Ann Coulter, who, by the way, has a nationally syndicated column. There's no punishment for this. Ann Coulter's shit was in my newspaper today. Although, interestingly, it wasn't available on the electronic version.
Yeah.
Because I don't think our local paper wants people Googling and figuring out that they allow her shit in their paper. But until we start talking about them, because they are this way, using blunt, clear language in everyday conversation, we're going to continue to get rolled over by people who either want to destroy us or want us to play nice with people who want to destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
And we can allow
it's the party of Donald Trump for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. We have to stop there, Driftglass.
Well, I need to run down very quickly, if you don't mind, a few of the things which the party of Donald Trump has done this week.
Okay.
Just very few. Betty DeVos has decided the government should go back to screwing over students by crushing them under college loan debt. That happened this week. Donald Trump is quietly and quickly building up a gigantic deportation force that is breaking up families all over the country because that's what he promised the meatheads he would do. Behind closed doors, Donald Trump has decided that it's okay for the state you live in to destroy Planned Parenthood where you live if that's what they choose to do. NATO is cool now. WikiLeaks is bad now. Offshore drilling, we're going back to do that again. And two little local items, or one little local item that we already talked about, but I do want to mention this one thing. We have a budget crisis here in Illinois. We have a budget crisis because our governor is a Republican and an ideologue who does not want a budget that does not include massive tax cuts and the destruction of Public Service Workers Union, which we're not going to tolerate. So this has been going on now for 2 years. The state is basically at a standstill.
It's a failed state.
It's a failed state. And it's failed on purpose because our governor chose to do this.
Yep.
And here's one small example of what happens when your governor decides to tank the budget and just not pay people until he gets his way. There's a teardown project happening right here on a main street of our town, and it's on hold. And it's on hold because they found asbestos in the shingles. And thanks to Governor Hedge Fund, there's no longer anyone at the state available to do the proper inspections.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no one to be sent out to tell the people who are doing the teardown what to do or how to do it or et cetera. So this half-wrecked house sits on a main street with equipment around it, locked up forever, apparently, because there's not enough money in the budget. There's no one at the state anymore
to remove asbestos.
To remove asbestos or even tell the people who are doing the teardown what they need to do to comply.
Wow.
That's what happens when the people at the top of your government hate government.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up screwing you over really bad. Anyway, I thought I'd just mention that this week, while Moabs were going off and Donald Trump was behaving like, you know, a president, learning from the president of China how Korea works, a whole lot of really awful shit was going on behind closed doors and under the radar, and we need to keep track of that shit as well.
We got a lot of letters this week from people saying, thank you for keeping me sane, and we want you to know that your letters and every time you contact us does the same thing right back for us.
It sure does.
And we thank you for that. And we don't have a cute kid story to end the show with because they're gone. They're in New Orleans.
Yep.
Although Junior Dude texted us with a picture of an item that you said you wanted.
But I already have it.
Except you already have it on your blog. He found in New Orleans a pair of sunglasses with the Confederate flag printed on them. And you have already done that as the Fox News special glasses.
I did that years ago. See, reality keeps catching up with me, which is starting to freak me out.
It keeps catching up with us. They're with their dad in New Orleans and traveling through Mississippi, and they'll make their way to Birmingham, where dad lives in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having a ball. They really are. So
I do have one kid story, heartwarming kid story from just a week ago.
Okay.
It was me and Junior Dude went to the institute.
Oh, you did. That's right. The Paul Simon Institute,
Paul Simon, a great and good man, no longer with us, although his daughter was lieutenant governor for a while. And maybe again. Knock on wood. Was a great and good public servant in Illinois and served in the chambers, the local and then up to national, then became senator, and began a public policy institute that continues to this day that's attached to a university, University of Illinois, I believe. And every year they sponsor a sort of government day. And there were kids there from Missouri and Iowa and Illinois and upstate and downstate, people who, you know, were taught up in the suburban area where I misspent much of my youth, so I got to say hello.
And it's high school seniors only, I believe.
The program is free.
It's sponsored by the Institute, so you don't pay to go.
It's high school seniors and people from like local community colleges.
Okay.
So there are some freshmen from like Lincoln Land College who are there.
Okay.
But you don't pay for a thing. That you come and you spend the entire day with panel discussions of actual elected representatives, people who are very young, people who got into office young. You get to sit in the actual Senate chamber, the actual House chamber. They make up some legislation for you to vote on and debate over. They get you up in front with a microphone. They take a picture. But they really and they explain at a level of detail that's really impressive how government actually works, what you do as a lobbyist, what you do as a spokesperson, what you do as an elected official, how things move through the House, what the first and second and third reading of bills are, what reconciliation is, and really how things work in the real world. And it goes on all day. And then if you like, you have a tour of the Lincoln Museum, which is also awesome. But it was a room full of high school students who are all Leslie friggin' Knope, who are fascinated and moved and passionate about public service.
Right.
And it just gave me such a lift to my spirit to see. And you got to go through the secret tunnel between the buildings. You got a real insider tour of the government buildings. And it's just
awesome.
The State
House, right. It's the Illinois State House.
The Illinois State House. Yeah. And it's just awesome. It was a wonderful thing. They did it for all the right reasons. And there are still things like that happening in the world that make me hopeful for the future.
Yeah. And those, I mean, you and I call them kids, but those young people really have a sense that working together within the framework of government and using that framework to make changes can make the world a better place.
Yeah. Yep.
And we haven't lost that either. So be grateful for that. I hope everyone who is practices Christianity in any way has a wonderful Easter. Happy spring to everyone. And each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Aubrey. Aubrey was named after Jack Aubrey, the captain from the Master and Commander novel.
Oh, my God.
Just like Jack, he is big and blonde. And Aubrey's human said, yeah, I was going to drive down to that Holocaust Center to buy some things, but I used your Amazon link instead.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's easier.
You know.
It's just easier.
Sean Spicer. My God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aubrey, in this picture, just be aware, is wearing a cone because he had a spot of surgery that went well.
Good.
So he's also wearing sunglasses to show that he's a star. So you want to go visit Aubrey at our Facebook page and website. Please just ignore the cone and focus on the glamour.
Yes. Yes.
You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. Again, we love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local.
Yes, we do. We
also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store.
Yup.
We had a letter from someone who wants to be known as Le Petit Fromage.
Of course. Little cheese, yes.
Little cheese, who has sent us a donation and also set up a $5 recurring donation. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And he wanted to make a toast. And he said, a toast to my dad, who passed away 5 years ago. Thankfully, he lived to see the country's first black president elected, but would have been beside himself at this turn of events. I like to think that he's out there somewhere shaking his head and joyfully saying, damn, I don't know whether to shit or go blind. My mother is the same way.
Yeah.
My late mother.
Yep.
He loved and lived to call out institutions when they were not doing right by the people they claimed to serve. And this person would also like to drink a toast to us, Drift Glass and Blue Gal, who absolutely nail early and often the way Republicans and other conservatives creatively forget, outright lie, and Borg-like drink sci-fi reference.
Yay.
Thanks so much for the external validation. You're welcome.
Well, you know, if you hear it twice, it must be true.
It must be true. And we appreciate you as well, and thank you for the kind words. Please share our podcast on Facebook or Twitter or other social media, and thank you for doing that.
Yes, indeed.
Hey, Drift Glass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, look, Al, in the interest of national security, the Internet Kitties will no longer be releasing the Litterbox Visitors Log.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the humping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Drift Glass, Blue Gal Podcast.